Hey folks, it's Mike from Profiling Evil. I've been studying criminal behavior for more than 40 years, and one of my favorite research tools is Truth Finder. It's online, and you're not going to believe the information stored there. So if you want to know more about that new neighbor, your babysitter, or your online date, give Truth Finder a try. I'm including a special link below with special discount pricing, but you got to click the link and enter EVIL10 at checkout. Now, we're an affiliate, which means we get a small commission, but you can cancel at any time. Hello, everybody. It's Mike from Profiling Evil. You know, the Chad Daybell trial is still ongoing up in Idaho. He's accused of murdering three people, J.J. Vallow, Tylee Ryan, and his wife, Tammy Daybell, all part of a murderous scheme with convicted killer Lori Vallow Daybell. Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to Profiling Evil, and thanks for hitting the subscribe button. Make sure you're ringing that bell, and please consider telling your friends about us. I've been spending a lot of time on Court TV talking about the Chad Daybell case, and I want to talk for a few minutes today about geofencing, my theory on the raccoon, and how did this wacky couple go from shooting Charles Vallow, the attempt on Tammy Daybell's life, the shooting against Brandon Bedreau, or the evolution of potentially bludgeoning children. Stick around. Well, last night on Court TV, I was up in the mountains, but I had the opportunity to speak a little bit about the area in which the little search warrants were done to collect cell phone data off of Chad Daybell, Alex Cox, and others involved in this murder case that's going on. Hats off. Kudos to the police department for gathering the information and putting together the forensic examination of the telephone calls. You're going to be able to catch in just a few moments my comments on Court TV, and then I lose connectivity for a few minutes, and so I don't get to cover the last part, which is what I want to talk about today. This case, the forensics around cell phone data, is boiling down to data that's collected from mobile devices, either wirelessly connecting to a Wi-Fi service, and I think they were connecting to the church and using it as a staging ground on this particular evening, or through GPS, or through the process of triangulation. That's the bringing together of the three closest cell towers to try to determine the location. For some people, it's a little frustrating that they can only get down to 150 meters. But keep in mind, here in the U.S., that's almost 500 feet, and that really isn't that big of an area when you consider this wide open space in which the Daybells were living. It really does show how important mobile forensics can be, and the fact that Alex Cox was inside that cone where this attempted murder happened is incredibly significant. So on this map, I've mapped out the location of cell towers. Now, this is according to Highfield, or the Homeland Security Department, the location of the nearest towers. The little red box on there indicates the location where the Daybells lived, that driveway where Tammy Daybell says someone tried to shoot at her. Now, the three closest towers are still a long ways away, and because this is such a flat area, I don't know if those towers are on mountaintops or just on a high mast, but that could impact the ability for them to collect the signal off of this. One tower, 3.1 miles away over in Sugar City. The next, 4.1 miles, and then you got to go northeast 5.8 miles to the next nearest tower. Now, this doesn't take into account things like small cell installations or microwave that might be connected or other Wi-Fi points that could be helping to narrow down that area of certainty showing where the phone is. But as I talk about this on Court TV, you're going to catch a little better glimpse as you think about this thing in totality.
All right, Mike King, let's talk about this geofence, evidence, and warrant. I understand you've prepared a couple maps as well to help us understand this and how they are able to place Alex Cox in the area at the time or the night that Tammy dies.
You know, Vinny, I think for the folks that don't live in an urban area, they can't really wrap their mind around why is it such a large area. And when we looked at that map, when we saw 450 meters, which is almost 500 feet, just a few feet under 500 feet, that's a pretty big area. But when you start talking all this farmland and you in this area here, it really becomes pretty small. What are the chances that this guy would be inside of that perimeter at the right time? It's just phenomenal to me. And I think it's such a great capture by law enforcement to get that warrant and to be able to put this together and show. I don't know why he was at the church and why they selected the church. My guess is that maybe Alex Cox knew the password for the Wi-Fi in that church, and it was a place where he could do some of his searching. And his internet searches have started to tell us an awful lot, but we start to see these breadcrumbs that tell us where they're moving. And, you know, the challenge, we talked about it before, Vinny, is that that big area that we're looking at, it might get smaller because the officer said there was some Wi-Fi involved. It could have been the church Wi-Fi. It could have been Wi-Fi at the Daybell house that was the IP address that was hitting and delivering a little tighter circle. But all the while, they're combining these three things, GPS, the Wi-Fi, and then tower locations where they...
Ironically, as he's you're talking about Wi-Fi and we're losing your signal at the same time.
Well, I'm never surprised by the next question that Vinny Politan will ask me on Court TV. But this one did capture me a little bit as we went back and talked a little more about the raccoons. Maybe it was because I was up in the mountains. I have a place just east of Park City, Utah, up in the mountains, and I was up trying to get the water turned on in my cabin. As I sat there, Vinny pitched the idea of what I think about this idea that there were raccoons out in the daytime and John Pryor's attempt to try to minimize Chad Daybell's wife, Tatami, that he had killed another raccoon. And here's the key word, that he shot the raccoon, that he buried it in the pet cemetery where he was burning sticks. All things that tie into this murder case and the location where the bodies of Tylee Ryan and J.J. Vallo were recovered. Let's watch.
This is the text that I refer to as Raccoon Gate. This is the text from Chad Tatami, September 9th, 2019. This is right around the time, last time Tylee is seen. Well, I've had an interesting morning. I felt I should burn all the limb debris by the fire pit before it got too soaked by the coming storms. While I did so, I spotted a big raccoon along the fence. I hurried and got my gun. He was still walking along. I got close enough that one shot did the trick. He is now in our pet cemetery. Fun times. That was a text message. So what is the deal with the raccoons? Well, John Pryor, Chad's lawyer today, is reading an email written by Tammy Daybell to her son, who's overseas. This is in June of 2019. Take a listen.
Another adventure we had this week involves a raccoon. Last year, we had skunks. This year, a raccoon. We thought stray cats were getting into the cat food, but nope. Garth saw it one night, and it was a raccoon. We borrowed a little trap from Matt Price, but when Garth went out to check it that night, the raccoon ran up the tree by the trap. It was huge. No way it was going to fit in the trap. It was larger than Chase and had really long teeth. Garth kept his flashlight on it and called us in the house. Dad got his gun. He shot it out of the tree, then shot it again as it tried to run across the yard. We now have a raccoon buried in the compost heap.
All right. Mike King, you look like you're closest to a place that could potentially have raccoons tonight. What are your thoughts about a daytime morning sighting of the raccoon versus nighttime? I'm not that familiar.
You know what, Vinny? I've had a lot of raccoons harassing us, even right here where I'm sitting, and I don't see them in the daytime. So that thing bothers me. I was glad when you brought it up. And a raccoon, once it's in the tree, if it's got a flashlight on it, will usually stay. So the whole storyline's just kind of bugging me about in the middle of the day, this thing trying to cover ground and get from one place to another. Again, a raccoon is a nocturnal animal. So unless it was chased out of its hiding spot, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, finally, we spend a couple of minutes talking about the nature in which these homicides have occurred in this wacky case. It started out with Alex Cox taking long-range shots. You think about Brandon Boudreau. You think about Charles Vallow. That was close-quarter shooting. And then Tammy Daybell. Again, all of these with a weapon that might ensure success. But I believe as Alex gained more confidence and as he received more inspiration and confidence voting from Chad Daybell and Tammy Daybell, we know Tammy was responsible because she's been convicted, and allegedly Chad is involved in this. We see this becoming more intimate in nature. Let's catch my comments on Court TV and the comments of my two panelists who joined me.
And Adam, I still can't believe where we are, and we're talking about your niece, Tylee, that these people, they killed her, they burned her, they put her in a pet. This is unreal. Lori had to know about this. It doesn't, you know, she's not putting blinders on here.
Oh, no, there's no doubt about it. This was all a plan, you know, with Chad, you know, with Lori and Alex. The whole thing was all planned out. I don't know where they got all the ideas of how they were going to kill these people, my nephew and my niece. With Tammy, I don't know how they, you know, came up with a plan for that. But obviously, Chad was in the bedroom and must have let Alex in with Tylee and JJ. It was planned. And, you know, on our podcast, Rex and I, my Uncle Rex, we're going to talk about actually, we're going to talk with Mike, too. And we think that there could be some cult things involved with this as far as the way that they killed him, that there could be other people involved with participating in either the killing or the burying and all that stuff. So it's all terrible. It's really difficult to think that people could get into their minds and turn into this kind of behavior. But again, I think that, again, they were convinced that, you know, somehow, obviously, money's involved, sex is involved, but also this crazy dark spirits. Tylee was a dark spirit. JJ was a dark spirit. They turned into zombies. They have to be killed.
Yeah. Mike, looking at the pattern here, though, it seemed like it was guns at first, right? There was the Brandon Boudreau shooting. There's Charles Vallow was shot. Then there's the attempt on Tammy's life with the gun. But we don't know for sure how Tylee was killed because of the state of her remains. What do you think about putting all those together? Like, it's a pattern, but it isn't a pattern, right?
Yeah, I look at Alex Cox as kind of this budding serial killer hitman who's trying to do what he thinks God wants him to do and follow his sister and, in this case, Chad, if he is, in fact, involved. The thing that I find about this, Vinny, that is so interesting and is so close to other kinds of serial predator crimes is that oftentimes they will get more personal as they get better at it. And we know that Alex wasn't very good at it, that he didn't understand things like shooting at close range versus longer ranges where he was sighting a weapon in. And hopefully that's why Brandon survived. But as we see the time get closer and closer to the children, we see the intimacy getting closer and closer. And that's something that I've seen over and again in other kinds of predatory cases. Again, when they're uncomfortable and new at it, they're going to use something to guarantee success, like a rifle. But then they're going to want that thrill, and it just doesn't come the same, so they have to get more and more intimate. And isn't that a wacky thing to think about?
Sky, I wonder, and I think about this, did they think, like, they were going to get away with it? Like, two children missing, that, you know, someone's going to say something.
I think they absolutely thought they were going to get away with it. And I think, you know, if you look back at the sort of trail of bodies, they had gotten away with it for a long time. I mean, Alex was never really even looked at for Charles' murder. And so they were getting away with it already. And I think that that is, I don't know, it's kind of like a drug, maybe, that they've gotten away with it. They think they're going to continue to get away with it. And beyond that, I believe they thought they were doing it for a higher power, that God was asking them to do this. And that's why they were getting away with it. So I feel like they felt like they were invincible.
And that's how that intersection, Adam Cox, again, of the murder, and then you feel that cult-like beliefs that they have, that they're being protected. And that's what this is about. It keeps coming back to those three.
Like I said, this story is so complicated with all the different things that we've all mentioned before. And it all comes back to a belief system and, you know, how this is all going to, in my opinion, their minds were like, God is allowing us to get away with this because this is his plan. He's behind this. Like Charles did, we didn't get in trouble for Charles. We didn't get in trouble for, you know, and my belief is, I think that Chad had told him the end of the world is coming. The world's going to be in this chaos. So no one's even going to notice before, you know, July or whatever date that he said that. No one's going to even notice the kids are missing because so many people are going to be dead because the end of the world's coming and all these people are going to be scattered and it's going to be completely different. I really believe that was their mindset going into all this. It wasn't like, oh, we can just kill Tylee and JJ and no one's ever going to miss them. I really believe that the only way that they thought that would be like, oh, well, the end of the world's going to be here. So we're doing what we're doing right before God comes. And obviously that didn't happen.
Right.
Well, there you go. This crazy case has come to another close for the weekend, and it'll jump back into gear on Monday morning. But I want to know what your thoughts are on these topics. And is it helpful when I take time to talk about these individually with you to explore what I think are going to become key markers as the prosecution puts together all of the case material in this thing? Remember, there are multiple forms of evidence, and in this case, we've got it all. We got a body. We got forensic and physical evidence. We have admissions, not confessions, but admissions in this case. And we've got all kinds of circumstantial evidence. And that's the stuff I like the most, because circumstantial is that stuff that says A plus B equals C. And I think we're going to find that all of this comes together in a way that finds Chad Daybell guilty of murder. I'd like to know your thoughts. Please put them down below. Well, hey, folks, I watched three big moments in the Chad Daybell triple murder trial yesterday. They jumped out at me, and I'm inviting you to stick around and get my take on why I think they're important. Let's talk about that doomsday couple, ritual murder, and my thoughts on subdividing property and burying your wife. Hey, welcome to Profiling Evil, and thank you for tuning in. We're talking about that triple murder trial against defendant Chad Daybell, who's accused of murdering his wife, Tammy Daybell, and his new lovers and wife's children, Tylee Ryan and Joshua Vallow. Please take a moment and subscribe to our channel, folks, and please give us a thumbs up. Now, we've been talking a lot about the Daybell case, and I've been spending a lot of time on court TV responding to things that are coming out in court. And if you've been watching court, there's been a batch coming out. Now, I think we all saw the writing on the wall as the prosecution revealed that Chad Daybell wanted to divide or subdivide the property where the home was, where Tammy Daybell lived and where Tammy Daybell died. He wanted to build a second home on his Idaho property for his new wife, Lori Vallow Daybell, who he suggested was just too creeped out to sleep in the same home where his wife tragically died 10 days earlier. Now, are any of you wondering, like I am, if Chad continued to sleep next to Tammy until he heard her mysteriously roll out of bed on the morning of her death at 6 a.m. I mean, what on earth was going on from the time she died until the time this was reported? According to testimony, Lori, this new blushing bride, needed a place to live because the old house had history. Now, their thought was to build a modular home on top of a concrete slab somewhere on their 3.75 acre piece of land. Now, remember, I said it was about 4 acres on Court TV, but I actually checked out the actual documents this morning, and it was 3.75 acres. It really makes you wonder where they plan to place that cement slab and the house if, in fact, they were approved to do this. And, frankly, would it have been directly over the top of that location where JJ and Ty Lee were found buried? I talked about this on Court TV, and I wanted to share that exchange with you.
Also joining us tonight, religious cult expert, retired police commander, host of Profiling Evil, and the author of the book you need to check out, Deceived. Mike King is with us. All right, Mike King, in a rush, I need another house. I need one fast. Well, did he need a new little love palace for his incarcerated wife? Or do you think he needed to put a house in a particular place on the property to maybe cover some things up?
You know, that's where my mind was going, Vinny, is this idea that he's got to get a piece of concrete down, something in place. Getting a foundation dug, I don't think was something that he wanted to do. But getting that modular home in place and putting it in just the right spot would make it really difficult for anybody to go in and for a cadaver dog or for someone to go in and physically dig up, get a search warrant to tear a house down and put and tear up a piece of concrete. Those are the things that judges really frown upon because of the huge nature and expense. So a tactical move, absolutely. And most importantly, I think it's a way, just like burying the children there, it's a way to maintain control because you have a great deal of risk if you put them out in the woods somewhere and somebody stumbles across them or an animal digs them up. So I'm right with you. I think this thing was planned out that way.
Yeah. Might have been easier to do like a sport court, something like that. You know, that could be done in the backyard too.
You know, the next really important thing that came out during testimony this week was the speed in which Chad Daybell wanted Tammy buried after her death. Now, keep in mind the series of events that were going on in this saga, and I want to kind of hit those. First, Tammy Daybell reported that a man with a rifle shot at her 2 times in her driveway on October 9th. Now, this is in 2019. She said she could hear the sound of air rushing past her head as each shot was fired. Now, keep in mind that Alex Cox had silencers for his weapons. It's interesting how different people respond under pressure and what kind of sounds they hear, what they don't. Some report a crack, some report the sound of an actual gunshot, and some report that same sound of rushing air. Now, law enforcement somehow failed to connect the dots when 10 days later, on October 19th, Chad Daybell reported that Tammy was dead, moments after he heard her fall out of their bed. Now, the 19th was a Saturday, and here's what's so bizarre. Chad immediately reached out to his former colleague, who was a funeral director down in Utah, asking him to bury Tammy and bury her as quickly as possible. That funeral director reported how uncomfortable he was. In fact, he even questioned whether she may have died by unnatural causes. 2 days later, on Monday, October 21st, Chad went and filed for a claim against Tammy's life insurance. Now, this was the first business day after Tammy's death. A day later, on the 22nd, Tammy Daybell was laid to rest. A funeral was held for her in Springville, Utah. And this is 300 miles to the south of where they lived in Rexburg, Idaho. Now, he was under pressure by the community where they lived in Idaho and by Tammy's former colleagues to have a memorial service. So he consented and they had a memorial service the next day after the funeral on the 23rd of October. And if all of this isn't disturbing enough, Chad apparently then met and fell in love with Lori Vallow after all this happened. Now, Daybell didn't want to necessarily tell all his friends what he was up to, that he was going to go to Hawaii and marry Lori. So instead, he made up this story that he was traveling to Hawaii to help a friend with an autobiography that he was writing. Instead of writing an autobiography, though, Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow were prancing along the beach in their little white outfits with pitchers and ukuleles and flower lays, and they got married. Chad married Lori on the beaches of Hawaii. His children didn't know. His friends didn't know. Her family didn't know. But they would all learn about it through the news media. And in case you missed the timeline, it was less than 2 weeks burial of Tammy Daybell, his loving wife of 28 years, and the discovery, meeting, courtship, 10-day relationship, and marriage of Lori Vallow, who now is Lori Daybell. The doomsday couple was in full swing. Vinnie Politan spoke with one of my co-panelists who indicated that this kind of behavior might be acceptable in the Latter-day Saint faith belief system. Now, I'm unsure if he fully understood the question that Vinny was asking, and perhaps I didn't understand the question, but I sure didn't agree with his comments, and I shared my opinions when Vinny asked me about how I felt and whether this was appropriate behavior from a religious perspective. Religious or not, I didn't think it was appropriate, and I offered these comments, and I'd be interested in yours. Let's watch.
Quickly, meaning that he wanted to have the funeral service as soon as possible, and this was on a Sunday morning, and I said, well, with social media, we need to have word get around so that the people will know, so you'll have somebody showing up at the funeral. And even announcing in the newspaper, there's deadlines to meet. And so he said he wanted to get this done just as quickly as he could.
John DeLynn, from your perspective, this speed, is this normal when tragedy strikes?
Absolutely not. No, in the Mormon context, it would not be unheard of to wait 2 weeks, but you would definitely at least wait until the weekend and hold the funeral service on a Saturday in a local ward chapel. So that's absolutely bizarre. And then, of course, marrying just a couple weeks later. I mean, it almost, again, makes me think that they really were sincere believers, that somehow God was inspiring all this, because, they weren't that dumb. I know they were motivated, but they would have to know that these sorts of rash, fast behaviors would elicit concern and suspicion by all those around them. And that's another reason why I actually think they sincerely believed that somehow God and Jesus were wanting them to go to Hawaii to usher in Jesus.
Questions asked.
Mike King, looking at that calendar, it is jaw-dropping.
I'll say, and I'm going to just disagree a little bit. I don't care what religion you're from. I don't see this being acceptable behavior. And the fact that this family was completely ripped apart, they lost their mother. The children see their dad running off and doing all kinds of things, heading over to Hawaii, getting married. They learn about it in the news. The neighbors that are being confronted by, hey, let me introduce you to my new wife. I don't care what religion you're from. I'm having a difficult time believing any faith tradition would support that kind of behavior. But then you start looking at all of the ideology that's involved here. And to me, Vinny, what it really speaks to is this idea, and we've talked about it before on the show, this idea that reality is rarely as cool as fantasy. And their fantasies were completely running every decision that they made. They can call it revelation if they want, but everything that was happening around this fantasy of them two getting together. And all they were doing was business at this point. They were trying to get rid of anything that stood in the way. They were trying to get rid of anything that might be an anchor dragging them down, and they were focused on themselves and moving forward. And I'm going to have a hard time accepting about any other idea in this thing.
Well, my rebuttal sparked a little bit of a debate between the two of us, and I wanted to share the points, the counterpoints, and my final response. And I'd really like to know what your thoughts are on this one, folks, especially after you watch this and you think about the testimony that you heard of this week. Let's watch.
John DeLynn, I get back to how I started this whole thing. 28 years with Tammy, and within a day and a half, he's cashing in already.
I'm going to respectfully kind of push back in a friendly way to Mike King. I don't think I was maintaining that the Mormon Church would have approved of these murders, but that's not what I was saying. What I will say is that the Mormon Church teaches its members that the Holy Ghost communicates to them through their thoughts and their feelings. What's also taught to the members in the Book of Mormon, 1 Nephi chapter 4, that God told Nephi, one of the first prophets in the Book of Mormon, to chop off the head of a man that he needed to obtain some brass plates from. So I'm not saying that the Mormon Church or Mormons would ever approve of this behavior. What I am saying is that it's very likely they were sincere believers of the emotions and the thoughts that were in their head, because the Mormon Church had taught them to believe that the Holy Ghost of God speaks to them through their thoughts and their feelings. If you look at the little book that was under Lori Vallow's knee when she's wearing that bikini at poolside in Hawaii, it was a book called Visions of Glory. And that's a book that talks about Jesus coming, and there's going to be apocalypse, and there needs to be a one mighty and strong, which comes from the Book of Isaiah. And I think Chad and or Lori felt like they were the one mighty and strong to usher in Jesus' second coming. So I think if we neglect to understand the religious motivations here, we won't fully understand, why this happened, but why other things similar may happen again.
Mike King, I'll give you the final word.
Oh, heck, John can't offend me. I love this open discussion and the fact that we really explore this thing from a bunch of different angles. Absolutely, people get these religious ideologies and they believe they've got to do what God wants them to. But heck, I go back to the fact that if you believe the Bible, it took about 6,000 or 7,000 years to build the world. I don't think God says, hey, you got to get married in 10 days.
Well, I want to thank our guests tonight, John DeLynn, Mike King, Dr. Carol Learman. Always great to have you on the program. We appreciate your valuable time and great insight, and we'll see you again very, very soon.
Well, I hope you'll share your thoughts on these two points. I mean, what do you think of Chad Daybell? What was his real motivation in building another home on his property? Now, keep in mind, the same property and potentially the same location where the bodies of J.J. Vallow, Little Joshua, and Tylee Ryan were discovered. And then I want you to take a minute and weigh in on a second question, and that is, why was Chad Daybell trying to get Tammy Daybell's life insurance money so dang quickly, the first business day after her death? And when should you go and ask for the life insurance policy on your loved one? Mike. Well, thanks for supporting Profiling Evil, and thanks to those of you who are taking advantage of our little sponsorship gift package. By sending $20 through the PayPal link on the screen, you can be provided with a Profiling Evil gift pack, and you'll be supporting Profiling Evil in a small financial way. And to make it all a little bit sweeter, we're going to send you back in this gift pack in return a couple of things. 4 Profiling Evil cork drink coasters. We're also going to include 4 Profiling Evil stickers and a Profiling Evil pen. Now listen, if you're in the United States, we're going to ship it to you for free. So please consider donating that $20 to Profiling Evil. And thanks for supporting us. It really does help us pay the bills and keep this thing going. I hope you'll check out Profiling Evil on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter. And check out our audio podcasts on your favorite podcast platform. I am just really excited to announce that just today we hit 250,000 downloads on Profiling Evil's audio podcasts. So make sure you're checking them out. Hey, next week I'm going to be in Los Angeles for the week meeting with law enforcement agencies. I'm going to continue to weigh in on the Chad Daybell murder trial. So please make sure that you've subscribed and make sure that you're giving Profiling Evil a thumbs up. And please consider sharing this with your friends. Hey, thanks again for your support, and we'll see you soon at the next crime scene. Hey folks, it's Mike from Profiling Evil. I've been studying criminal behavior for more than 40 years, and one of my favorite research tools is TruthFinder. It's online, and you're not going to believe the information stored there. So if you want to know more about that new neighbor, your babysitter, or your online date, give TruthFinder a try. I'm including a special link below with special discount pricing, but you got to click the link and enter EVIL10 at checkout. Now, we're an affiliate, which means we get a small commission, but you can cancel at any time.